Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.
Welcome everybody to another episode of Tide Chasers. We got a special guest from South this time, but before we get into that, just go through a few things here. You can find us at Tide Chasers Podcast on Facebook. We are also at Tide _ Chasers on Instagram. All the links to where you can find our podcast on different platforms is going to be in the bio of our Instagram page as well as on our Facebook page. And then, of course, we strive to entertain, so we do well with getting feedback. So the feedback is very important to us. Positive feedback, negative feedback, whatever you have for us, just bring it our way. However, you know, we're just trying to keep this thing rolling. So like, subscribe, and share content. We got more exciting things coming. Welcome, Kwa. What do you got going on over there, buddy? How you doing?
Good. I'm suffering from this sunburn from yesterday, being out all day, you know what I mean? Been all day on the water, fished the morning session, then took a little lunch break, then I fished the night evening session. It was a good day out.
Yeah, it looks like you had a pretty exciting trip getting your first striped bass on the fly, and that can't beat that, man. We got some exciting content coming up with that down the road. But without further ado, I would like to introduce our guest today. It's Warren Reese from Run the Marsh down in Virginia. How you doing, Warren?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing awesome.
And we're excited to have you on.
Thank you. I'm excited to be talking with you.
So give us a little feedback, or give us a little bit of a, background on your influences. But first, if you could give us your social media contacts, how we could find Run the Marsh on Instagram, Facebook, just to give our listeners a little briefing so they can look you up and know where to find you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So I am a co-creator of a page called Run the Marsh. You can find us on Instagram at Run the Marsh VA. You can usually just look it right up, but if you have to type it in, it is run_the_marsh_VA. We also have a website, runthemarsh.com. And on Facebook, you can find us under the same name, Run the Marsh VA.
I got to tell you, you did really well with those underscores. It took me like 8 episodes to get the underscores right.
I was doing some studying beforehand.
I had to really practice. Qual and I, we both really screwed up the underscores a few times, and now we got it down. And yeah, then me with the Facebook page, I couldn't get that right either, but you nailed it. So why don't we jump right into it? Why don't you give us a little feedback on your early influences and how you got started in the fishing world?
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, I'm taking it all the way back. Growing up, my parents got divorced at an early age. I ended up staying with my father most of the time. He was a big fisherman, still is a big fisherman. And he had taken all his money that he had left after everything settled down, invested it in property. And we were living out of a 28-foot mallard trailer. But we also had a boat. I think at the time, I can't remember what he had at the time. It might have been a 21-foot Grady White. And then after that, we had a 24-foot Aruba, but just dilapidated kind of fishing boats. And we would go out fishing all the time. That was how we got away from things, from everything that was going on. Just go out and hit the water. We'd go out. People would ask us what time you'd be back. And he would famously reply with 9 o'clock. And whether that was 9 o'clock PM or AM was, kind of just up the bite. So I remember spending a lot of nights sleeping in a cuddy cabin just long enough for my dad to wake me up, have me reel in another drum or, another double up bottom rig croaker. And just fishing all the time. Elizabeth River, Lynn Haven Inlet, Rudy Inlet, the islands out in the bay, Tube, Hot Ditch. Man, you name it, we were out there. We were doing it. So,
so that area as a whole has always been home to you. That those waters have always been your home waters.
Always.
And then, how old would you say you were when you first started getting out on the water with your dad on the boats and stuff?
Since I can first remember, I mean, honestly, since I was three and I can remember, but you know, my dad's got a picture of me at 2 years old on the boat, lowering my legs down into the mouth of about a 45, 48 inch striper. So I've always, just always, you know, when I started really casting and fishing by myself, I was 5 years old. My dad took me to Walmart. I got a 6 foot orca, medium light action, 1,000, 1,500 reel. And I just carried that stick with me everywhere I went. It was like my sword.
Can't beat that. Yeah. I mean, I think I started out on the Shakespeare, the Shakespeare $20 combo from Walmart myself. If you can get past that, you can do anything. If you can get past fishing with something like that. So
I still fish with that stuff. I still do it.
So now I've been following you guys. I don't know, probably a year and a half, 2 years or so at the Run the Marsh page. How did you guys become Run the Marsh, and who else is part of your crew there?
So Run the Marsh was started by me, Warren Reese, and my very good friend and fishing partner, Glenn Pizzanello. There's also a third guy that we just kind of brought onto our team. Great addition. His name's Wes Armentrout. Killer fisherman, killer trout fisherman. But we started just me and Glenn were just kind of at the same time happening to get out of saltwater fishing because we were in high school, we were teenagers and just getting out of high school. And we're more, you know, concerned with girls and partying than going out and fishing. And when we started to settle down, take stuff more serious, we just kind of picked up the rods and reels again and texted each other and we're like, hey, you want to go bass fishing? And we started bass fishing like every day. Every morning we would go out and bass fish at night. We would catfish at night, carp fish. I mean, anything you can think of, fresh water, we were into it. And then just moved right back into the salt, started Run the Marsh. And that was kind of that. That's where the story started.
Now Qua and I here, we both are marsh guys. We love the marsh. We love the sods. Where did that name originate from? Is it pretty much you guys are on foot just slaying fish all the time in the back, or is there more of a meaning to that name?
We're big wading fishermen and kayak fishermen. I actually fish out of a canoe a lot, and just kind of tromping through the marsh. I mean, it's kind of just like a lifestyle, you know, so. So I was just kind of thinking, and I'll tell you the truth. I was in the bathroom at the ultimate thinking chair and was like, man, what do? We run the marsh. And that's where it popped up, Run the Marsh. Because I wanted to name it something that kind of felt as cool to me or to us as we felt, you know, when we were doing it. You know, we don't just do it, we run it. So, and that's kind of the sentiment that we carried into the name.
Very nice. Now, I will say there's something to be said for those of us that can really do it on foot. Like it's not an easy task sometimes because you're contending with the boaters often. You know, you are often scouting out these spots that look so great on maps. And then you get there and you're like, what the heck am I doing?
Crash.
So it's there's a lot of work put in. So you can't just drop gas in the boat and run out there and be like, okay, this sucks and move on. You got to track all the way back the way you got in there. So yeah, I love it. I love it until I hate it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Until you got to walk back.
It. Yeah. So it's like, you got these waders, you're all mucked up all the way up to your chest and you're like, well, crap. Now I got to go back through all that again. And now I have a couple fish to bring with me, or I lost this or I lost that. It's just, it's a pain, but it's also a labor of love. Like I've always said, like, if you can do well on foot, you can do well anywhere because it's a different ball game. You're bringing a game to the fish at that point. So now,
it forces your focus.
Yeah, for sure. Now I come down and fish for Virginia Beach pretty regularly. I love it there. You guys absolutely crush. But more specifically, I see that you do well fishing at night. I love fishing at night, but mainly I choose that because I'm not choosing fishing over my family. I have three kids. I have a wife, so I got to split my time a little bit more than, well, you have something a little bit in that range now. So, but I got to pick my time. So I'm not choosing fishing over family. So is it by design or is that a personal preference? You guys really like to fish at night because you get away from other people, or is it just a certain thing about being out there at night and doing your thing?
It's definitely a good mix of both. Like you said, I've got a similar situation just about. I've got a fiance and a newborn. But before that, I just had to warm the egg, so to speak. But it's a combination of both. A little bit out of necessity because we have jobs. We have families. We have things that we like to accomplish, you know, outside of fishing. And also, after a while, it became a preference because we were able to dial in spots so well at night. We were able to develop new techniques that really only seem to work at night and different stuff like that. Yeah. Like, I'll share one with you guys, no problem. Short trolling at night, we've been able to bring striper out of 30, 40, 50, 60 feet of water all the way up to the top of the water, you know, 49 degree water temp and, 2 o'clock in the morning, no moon. And just kind of figured it out. And a tip for everyone listening, just get you a little floating jerk bait and just toss it about 15 feet behind your kayak. No further than that, just about 15 feet behind the kayak. That'd be a long cast. And just go. I mean, we slay them, stuff like that. So it really just became we love fishing at night because we've kind of figured out new ways to do it.
I, the last time I was down there, I did a lot of trolling for my kayak. It's not something I typically do because I'm a cast and retrieve guy, but as I was moving about, you know, I said, you know what, why don't I just try this? So I had like a little paddle tail that I was throwing out behind my kayak, and I must've caught 40, 50 speckled trout just doing that without doing anything else, just trolling that little paddle tail behind me. And not all of them were big. I think I had like maybe three over 20, but most of them were like just keeper range, but it was a lot of fun. Like as you're going to the next spot, you're catching fish still without actively fishing. It's kind of a different scenario. So the trolling thing, that's something that I plan to do a little bit more of myself.
We'll now, try it at night.
You know, what's funny is that I've only kayak fished at night one time and I was down there doing it. I actually was fishing deep back in Lynn Haven, and by the time I was able to move around by the tide, I was out by the Lesnar Bridge, and it was like 11 o'clock at night. And it was just nuts.
And that tide is insane. Yeah. I mean, we've had that tide ripping like 4, 5, 6 knots. I mean, just absolutely plowing you out of there.
Yeah. It's like a toilet bowl just keeps sucking you back into a hole. You got to really power through it. I've not experienced that many other places, but there it's like, it's pretty intense. And plus you got all these little shallow flats that you got to watch out for at night. You got to go around the world to get back to the ramp.
Oh, I mean, you figured the Lesnar Bridge used to have a famous sign underneath of it that says, isn't this such a great place to die?
I've heard stories of many kayakers losing their battle there. So I take it very seriously having, you know, three little kids at home. Now with the summertime fishing kicking off, how do you guys choose which fishery that you're going to target on a day-to-day basis? Is there one that you prefer over the other?
See, that is where, because summertime seems to be where it gets the toughest for us. We're big. We're kind of big on what would classically be considered your tough seasons. We're big wintertime guys. We excel in the wintertime. We're big nighttime guys. Summertime seems to be where all three of us kind of split off from each other, and we just almost fight over what's going to be the best, with the two things we can kind of agree on being flounder and cobia. Me personally, I'm going to be fishing the river. I'm going to be catching drum. I'm going to be fishing for drum And if it cools off in the evening time and I've already got my three, I'm going to be looking for some perch, essentially. Red drum, black drum, perch, croaker.
Croaker still exists around here?
Yeah.
Few and far between.
I haven't seen one of those up here in like 6-7 years, maybe.
It's funny. When I first met my wife and we were going on vacation to the shore, we would catch a fair amount of croaker. Like, this is 2011, 2012-ish. And it's just they've become extinct up here. I know you guys still get your hardheads down there and all that kind of stuff, but we don't see them much up here anymore.
Nope. When we saw the striper really move back in, the croaker population around here just plummeted. I mean, there's some spots, and really when I'm croaker's almost a bycatch, but it's like a unicorn bycatch, because the ones you do get anymore are either going to be 4 inches or they're going to be 2.5 pounds. And there's kind of no in between. So when you're dropping crab chunks down for drum and you manage to get one, you know, it's almost more exciting. So
yeah, they become special to you at that point. That's the way we look at some of our fish up here, as unicorns that used to be here, like weak fish and things like that. We don't see many of those anymore either. Now, is there a species of fish that you've decided that you need to spend more time, you know, up in your game on? Like, is there something out there where you're like, man, I really need to hone in on my skills here and improve on this fishery?
Sheep.
We love it. We're sheep guys. That we our episode that's going to be dropping this week is a sheep's head episode.
Perfect.
I think between how many sheep did you put in the boat last year?
55. 55, nice. four over 10.
Nice.
Caught my biggest last year. It broke my personal PB. It went 13 and some change. Yeah.
That's a Jersey sheep too.
That's a Jersey sheep. So 13, it was like 1320 or something like that.
That's no Chesapeake Bridge Tunnel sheep.
Yeah,
but you know, I get it. You guys are up north. That's awesome. And I can't say anything because my biggest sheep's head is probably about 1.5 pounds. So
really? Got some good sheep's head fishing right there.
Yeah, but we got too much good fishing up here.
Yeah.
Down here.
It's really that's one of the things. Like when I come down there, it's like, crap, what do I want to target? Because I love it all. I love redfish. Like there's nothing like throwing chunks of mullet at night in some lights and watching your line just disappear on a weightless hook. It's just amazing. I did that in the fall last year, and it was some of the most fun I've ever had.
It's a blast.
It was so much fun. Like 25 to 30 inch red drum, just pounding pieces of mullet. By the time your mullet goes under the water, it's gone. Your line is tight and it's on. It's so much fun.
It's like wacky. It's like wacky worm fishing for bass.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's like weightless mullet fishing. It's so much fun. Now, so sheep's head is your only one that you think you need to work on a little bit.
Now, not that I need to work on, but that's going to be something that I focus on. I'm going to do a lot of crab dropping this year. It's something I really enjoy doing, but really I just kind of smash the creeks and catch a lot of reds like that. But sheep's head is just going to be something that I focus on this summer. Other than that, honestly, it might be just kind of unicorn hunting, sharks in the river, maybe going to, there's a certain area in Virginia that holds tarpon. I'd like to mess around with that some. It's just kind of unicorn stuff, just stuff that'll really push me to use some fundamentals and just pay attention to my technique.
You might see me out at that certain area, because I know of that certain area and I've been meaning to check it out myself.
Yes. Yeah.
To get a Virginia tarpon would be pretty amazing.
No kidding.
Talk about that. Now that's a true unicorn there. And some of those ones at that place get pretty big, like 100-pound plus.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can find videos of it. So
yeah. If you're lucky, people are pretty like tight lipped on that thing.
They're tight lipped there. You can draw a line on the map all around. It's almost like a straight line. And when you draw that straight line through, you just notice that there's certain cities that all those guys are quiet because there's just something special in the water there.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I've been down there in the fall, and I've seen people netting, like, cob mullet, and seeing them pull like 18 to 22 inch snook up in the nets. Have you ever seen any of that yourself there?
No,
I won't say where, but I've seen like six or seven of them get pulled in three straight casts.
No, I've seen some Jack Crevalle, heard of some big uglies in shallow creeks, big 90-pound black drum, cobia back in the rivers and stuff like that, but no snook.
It's pretty exciting. I mean, obviously the global warming thing is a serious thing, you know, climate change is a serious thing, but we're getting to experience a lot of different fish in our areas and your areas that were unheard of years ago. It's pretty interesting to see how that change is happening right in front of us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's the biggest thing I think that people are noticing here, is our variety is kind of, I don't know if it's our variety that's dulling down a little bit, or just kind of our core species that are bulking up. I mean, we know our striper numbers back in the Chesapeake Bay, as much as you want to pay attention to what the numbers say, they're doing good. The striper in the Chesapeake Bay are doing good. The more we can fight Omega Red, the better we're going to do on striper. Trout are just insane numbers, but you used to hear about a lot of just, African pompano, kings. We still get some kings, wahoo in close. I mean, all kinds of stuff like that. And I just don't know if it's guys chasing after other things or what, but we're definitely seeing a lot of the core game fish bulking up, like trout, striper, drum, stuff like that.
Now, with my spring fishing, I usually somewhere around March, I start targeting snakeheads pretty heavily. And then by the time my favorite saltwater species open up here, you know, the seasons open up for them, I'm over them. Is there like a fish that you fish so hard that you're like, man, I gotta take a break. I gotta go do something else. Is there a fish in your repertoire that you have figured out so well that you just gotta move on for a little bit and give them some space?
Yes. Roll your windows up because a riot's about to start. Speckled trout. I get so sick of speckled trout. Honestly, right now, I'm so glad it's gotten up into the 90s air temp here, because that's going to drive those speckled trout into getting lazy up in these parts, down in these parts. I get so sick of them. By about December, I usually cannot stand speckled trout.
That's strange, because I'm friends with a couple of Virginia guys, too. And then they say the exact same thing. They're just tired of specs. Like we're up here like,
please, man, let us get some specs.
Let us just get a spec. Just let us just get one. And those guys are like, specs. But see, here's my one theory that I think why tarpon, more of these pelagics are coming inshore and whatnot. You guys have recently, in the past few years, have developed a really good run of shrimp. Like harvestable size shrimp.
Absolutely. Like
you guys even developed a fishery for it now. So I'm thinking, because of the warm water, cold Gulf Stream or whatever might be bringing this warm water up, the brown shrimps are moving north. And as they're moving north, they're bringing game fishes like tarpon, snook, you know, those kind of, you know, species further up in the search for them. Especially, you know, shrimp, they love marshes and stuff like that. So I'm not surprised that you'll find tarpon in the backs and stuff like that. I mean, even up in Jersey, we've had sightings of tarpon up here. We had dead carcasses of manatees up here. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's this global warming thing is playing a big role and a big deal with all these species. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Food follows the sun. So.
Yep.
I'll say this. I fished down there. It was last year. We entered the Chesapeake Bay from a creek that was probably 30 miles or so out from the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, maybe more than that. And the creek that we launched out of, there was 6-7 inch shrimp just jumping in the air right into the boat. Like you couldn't even move. Like you could hold a net out outside the boat and just catch them as you're going. And we were casting that moment. We were shrimp like 6-7 inches. So,
and they hold that way until the first of the year, pretty much every year.
Same.
It's nuts. Actually, Yeah, I mean, that from what I was told from my buddies who I was fishing with, it's like this has been a 3 or 4 year thing. It's happened in the last 3 or 4 years, which aligns with what you were saying, Qua.
I need to go down there and do shrimping.
You don't have to go far. You could cast that right at some of these creeks right off a dock and get tons. And then the fiddler crabs down there are like the size of a like that. It's nuts. You guys have a different breed of fiddler crabs.
I need fiddlers. I was looking all day yesterday for fiddlers for sheeping to see if I could pick my first one off for the season. Couldn't find any. The water was too high. I was just like, oh, God, finding crabs, finding bait sucks.
We get some monsters. We got some monsters. That's one of the big things I like to do because they keep pretty well. You could just put them in your bucket, you know, mm-hmm. throw a little wet towel over the top of the bucket or whatever you want to do. And, man, I love getting them. But we've also got another mud crab here. I cannot remember the name. It's like a Japanese mud crab, but they're purple. They're purple, and we get them. They'll be mixed in with the fiddler crabs. And at first I thought, well, it's early season. This is some sort of mating color or something like that.
Yep.
But we do. They're a lot smaller. I actually prefer them because I can put a whole one on a hook and I don't have to cut them. I mean, we really get some huge fiddler crabs down
here. Yeah, I've seen – we have the same ones up here. I think we call them mud crabs. So we get them mixed in with the fiddlers while picking them out. They're kind of darkish. They have that little like a purple tint to them. They're once in a while we'll find a few, and they make really crazy good sheep's head bait.
I'm a fan of fiddlers. Qua here prefers other like the Asian short crabs over the fiddlers. If I could fish fiddlers all year long, I would. And it's really for sheep's head, it's really like a peanuts catch elephants type things.
Yep.
Like we as a whole, we really like to use like the dime size fiddlers.
Dime size are the perfect size. Yep.
That fit on the hook perfectly. Like more than that, sometimes it's too much. Like you won't like even you won't even get touched. Like if you have a bigger piece of bait on there, it's actually pretty nuts. But I'll tell you what, man, bottom sweeper jigs with fiddler crab or your crab of choice, money, sand fleas, you name it. Like I slayed in Lynn Haven last year, sheep's head with my buddy, and we were using sand fleas, frozen live. It didn't matter. So. Keep that in mind. There's your pro tip. The bottom sweeper with whatever your favorite bait is, crustacean, and that'll help you.
I'll take it. I mean, typically, what are the like the areas or more like the structure type that you're focusing on picking up these sheeps? Is what I'm asking is like what are the structures wise when you're sheep fishing?
Warren,
Really just wooden structure. Cause that's kind of what I know as far as picking fish off.
Would this be back in like the marshes, like off of docks and stuff like that?
Yeah. Off of docks, at the edge of drop offs, right where it starts, because our drop offs are on average, they go from 4 to 40 when I'm fishing in the river. So right at the edge there, it's just such a hard drop off that on the other end, I mean, you always get a lot of food up on that ledge. So, I've not spent any time in my life just targeting sheep's head. Gotcha. I've been the only sheep's head I've ever caught was way, way back in the river, at our river lock where the salt and fresh separate. And I caught it on a beetle spin with a piece of shrimp on the back of it. And I thought it was a lost.
You got the lost fish on an obscure bait.
Yes. Thought it was a black drum and was all excited. Then picked it up and was like, that's a sheep's head. And right as I'm sitting there dumb with my mouth open, it flops off and gets out of there. So the first thing I do, I call Glenn up on the phone. No, I just caught a sheep's head. I just caught a sheep's head back at the locks. And, I think he still likes to debate me on that, whether it was or not, but I did caught one back there and it really just kind of got me fired up to go target them out in the river. Just something I've never really thought of.
Well, I can give you some spots in your backyard where you can catch them.
I would appreciate that.
The guy that's 400 miles away or 350 miles away, I can give you some spots.
Don't make me come up there and trout fish.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck.
There's probably one or two guys really good at it up here, and they don't tell a soul their secrets. So,
God, I can't imagine they would.
No, yeah. I mean, they've been known to every year at least pick off a good 40, 50 speckles under the radar. People barely can pick up one, and these guys have these perfect little holes at the speck. I mean, you guys know specks enough that they're really predictable. If they're at a spot one year, they'll come back the next year. They'll come back the next year. And same thing here in Jersey. These guys have these little holes that literally hold fish every year. They just go back and just pick them. You know what I mean?
That is crazy. So wild.
Yeah, it's insane. Like our other buddy who will be on the sheep set episode with us, he catches all the unicorns on obscure baits. Like he got a redfish fishing from the jetty, middle central Jersey on a green crab, like just tog fishing. Like it's, and then he caught a speckled trout. I mean, he's got mahi from the jetty. It's absurd.
Oh, that is crazy.
Unicorn Johnny.
We took a trip to the Run the Marsh guys, and a couple of our other friends took a trip to the Cape Cod Canal last May, and decided to go all the way out to the end of the jetties. And a buddy of ours was throwing a live target mackerel or a live target sand eel in mackerel. And it was a 9-inch bait. And he's throwing it and dragging it along the bottom, popping it. Well, right when he comes back to the jetty, about a 350, 400-pound ocean sunfish goes nose down on the bait, inhales it, and just starts scooting off away from the jetty. We were all sitting there so dumbfounded, an ocean sunfish turned mouth down and sucked that thing up. But he didn't want to fight it. He didn't want to catch it. He was like, man, this stupid fish. And we're just sitting there about doing backflips because he's just got this crazy obscure fish on the line.
What a shame. That's a story right there. That's one for the books there. If he was able to do anything with that fish, but that big of a fish probably wouldn't have had any shot anyway.
Oh no, we've got it on film though. So what little bit did occur, we've got it. So.
Oh, that's good. At least you got that.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, you'll see like billfish up in the Cape Cod Canal. Sometimes people will catch like billfish up in there. It's like sailfish and stuff like that.
A lot of sailfish go through there. Yeah. And albies. I saw a huge school of albies go through, and albacore, false albacore, bonito, whatever you want to call them, scream through there. And I'm sitting there with a spotlight on, just sitting there fishing for, what do we call it? A blue perch. I don't know. It's some kind of strange bottom feeding fish that they have there. It's great to eat. But I'm seeing these absolute rockets going by underneath my spotlight. And, turns out it was false albacore.
Albies. They move fast. Yeah. Super fast.
We call them albies, albacore up here. I guess down south, they call them bonitas. And, mm-hmm. You know, there are bonitas too, which are different fish. And it's just, It's a conundrum of sorts because you have the same fish that's called multiple different things in different locations.
Except one's edible that you can eat sushi, right. And one is just like shark bait.
Right. But the one that's shark bait's a hell of a lot of fun to catch. So I've heard.
But I've experienced this. I've been out. I've caught a 15, 20-pound bonita, the eatable kind, and then I caught a 15-pound albie on the same trip. The bonita will outrun and outfight an albie any day, guarantee
you. Yeah, there you go.
So similar too. That's so weird.
But very similar, but their power for some reason their power is a lot different. A bonita will dig down and dig deep. We were fishing 60-foot wrecks jigging, and then that thing kept shooting down, and I just thought it was a monster albie or something. It came up as a bonita, 20 pounds. And then like three drops later, I pick up an albie. Now albies don't run down. They run up. They run out and they run out east. So they try to spool you. But then after a while, they get tired enough. They start circling, just kind of like tuna. They circle, and then you just little grab them by the tail and lift them. But yeah, but Bonito, they dig. They'll fight to the end of their lives.
There's too many fish to catch out here.
That's the problem for me. That's the problem for me is I my eyes get too big when I start looking elsewhere. I know we have great fishing here, but I always want what I can't have, if you know what I mean. Like I always got to chase something else somewhere else. And next thing you know, I'm after work, just throwing my kayak on my rooftop and driving 500 miles with no plan.
I've been there, man. Yeah. Even though I always make fun of Dan for shooting down south to go fishing all the time. Like I have days when literally I just want to I want to hook up the skiff and take it down all the way down to Virginia Beach and chase that cobia bite you guys have. Like that insane sight fishing, you know, cobia bite. Like my 15-inch flat skiff has no reason to be out in the ocean front, but it will be.
We did it in a 14-foot aluminum, man. You can do it.
Yeah. So I mean, my boat was built for like 4 or 5 foot swell, so I don't really care. It'll handle it. So.
Well, perfect, because they'll get to if you go out there in it.
Yeah, I've been out in the ocean front 15 miles. Freaking fishing for bass, wreckfish, whatever, looking for cobia. I've come in with like 4 or 5 foot swells. I don't care. I put the full throttle down and I just eat them. It's going to be a wet ride in and I just don't care.
That's right. So you get the 4 to 5 foot swells before you even get to Fisherman's Island out of the creek.
Yeah.
you don't even have to get all the way out there. You get those swells. I'll never forget. I went out there. I fished Rudy. I'm on my way back home. I'm like, you know what? Let me go try the little bridge over by Fisherman's Island. I go out the creek. I'm like, yeah, today's not the day for that. It's not the day for that. I'm like, my kayak's like what you see on the movies where the guy doesn't come home. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to turn around.
And it happens fast too. That's the bummer is there's no warm up. Like when you go to the water park and the wave pool, you're just sitting out there and then you're sideways. You're like, man.
I was coming in as Medell was leaving Cloud Break Mods.
Yes.
Like, man, he goes, man, I had a great day. I'm like, great. This is going to be awesome. And I get out there and it just blows up on me. I'm like, you steered me wrong. I should have left when I saw you leaving.
Yeah. Well, usually if you see him leaving, he's already been out there for about 6 hours.
So. Yeah. He's a early bird for sure. All right, so now we're gonna switch it up a little bit here. You were recently blessed with a new addition to your family. How have you adjusted to fishing since becoming a father, and how much different is it for you now?
Oh, easy. I just don't.
There you go.
No, it's been cool. So circling way back, to the beginning, my dad's a big fisherman as well, so that helps, because my dad. My stepmom, really all my family, my fiance's family, they've been such a tremendous help that when my dad calls up and says, hey, can you find some time to fish within the next couple of days? All I have to do is ask my fiance and you know, tell her, hey, the Godfather has he's requested on this day that I fish, and she lets me. So I've been out once since then. I think it's going to be a smooth adjustment. It's just such an important part of my life that I don't see it as something, you know, I'm never going to feel any guilt or shame for taking some time to fish. And I know I'm going to be able to have a good balance. So how have I adjusted so far? I've been just a bit too tired to hit the night missions, but I'll get back.
It gets easier. I'll put it that way. And we had this conversation like offshoot one evening, but it all gets easier. I mean, heck, I'll never forget about 6 days after my son was born, I was out on my kayak with my father-in-law and I hooked up with my first muskie ever. And I get back, I'm like so excited. My wife's like, yeah, carrying the baby around. She's exhausted, but she was chill. And it's like, everybody's like, how in the world were you able to leave your newborn baby home with your exhausted wife and get out and go fishing? I'm like, she just said it was cool. I mean, I was fishing with her dad. You know, that was a point where he and I would see each other more than I would see my wife sometimes. Like we were fishing a lot together from the kayaks and all. So it's a balance for sure. Oftentimes you'll feel like you're doing the wrong thing by choosing fishing over your newborn or whatever it may be, but eventually it gets really awesome when you can take your kids with you. Like, I'll never forget my son catching his first snakehead when he was just 3 years old, or being on the cover of the Fisherman magazine when he was 4 years old with an almost 8 pound walleye. Like, all of my fishing accomplishments are trumped by anything he does, like anything he does in the fishing world, because, you know, I get the joy of saying that, you know, I spurned him into this. I turned him into this, this what he is as far as a fisherman. So I guarantee you, if you have any influence over it, you're going to love it. It's going to be the best, because then you have a fishing buddy for life, like you are with your dad.
And that's something I'm so excited for, just because, I mean, it's given me so much solace, so much peace to be able to fish and to go out and have such an extensive history with it, that it's connects right into your soul, you know, in a way that we only get maybe a couple things in our lifetime that will make us feel like that. And sometimes they're fleeting. Fishing really is forever, as long as we have an earth. So it's just something that's so deep, something that you can pour so much into, and get so much from. I hope that I can pass it down and communicate it to him in a way that, that gets him as deep as it got me and gives him as much as it's given me. Cause it's been, you know, next to my life and my redemption, fishing has been the greatest gift I've ever gotten in my life.
I totally agree with that, because honestly, outside of work and my family, it's really all I do. I don't have other hobbies. I don't have other passions. Like, I pour my non-family, non-work life into fishing. When it comes to fishing, it's like, it's an obsession for me. You know, when I'll be sitting on my couch, like in the dark, 3 o'clock in the morning, reading a certain article about something I want to check out, or watching this video, or watching Elias V video, or, you know, one of these other guys that I look up to, or what's that?
So that guy crushes.
Yeah. Elias, he's amazing. He's amazing. And, you know, it's a craft, right? So you're always doing what you can to work on it. If it means what it does to me or what it does to you, it's always something that, you know, you never know everything. I mean, there's always some little technique that's new or some little secret that you learn, and it's like, man, and then the light bulb goes off. Yeah. So it's just it's an amazing thing. Like, you can literally fish for the same species of fish your whole life and still learn. Like, there's bass fishermen that's all they fish for. I don't know how they do it. I don't know why they do it, because honestly, I'm sorry, my bass fishing friends, I don't get joy out of bass fishing specifically. I like when I catch a nice bass, you know, as a bycatch, it's great. But if all I did was target bass, I don't know how that would be. I just love being, like, for example, one day I could be salmon fishing. The next day I could be 600 miles away from there fishing for redfish. And I get joy out of that, because it's like, If you only fish for one species of fish, I think it kind of gets stale or can get to the point where you run out of accomplishments, right? So for me, it's always about, you know, what's the next accomplishment? What's the next milestone? What's the next thing I want to conquer? So usually every year I add 3 or 4 new fish species to my list to try and conquer, per se. Last year, sheep's head, I caught a couple before that, but last year sheep's head was my main goal, speckled trout and redfish. And I did really well on all of them last year, but that was my goal. So this year I'm up in my game a little bit and trying some other things. So it's always something to learn. It's always a challenge. It's always something to challenge yourself. Now, I'm sure bass fishermen can find other things to challenge themselves, but for me, I like the idea that I could fish for completely different species of fish and completely different bodies of water one day to the next.
Well, here's my theory behind that, and I'm going to try to defend for a bass fisherman. I don't bass fish. But just to break it into our terms, as in saltwater, it's like striper fishing. What was the term from the other episode? We like to catch them, but we don't like to target them, right?
So we love catching them, hate targeting them.
There you go. Love catching them, but hate targeting them. You know why? Because how many different ways do you think that we can catch striped bass? There's trolling. There's live lining bunker. There's top water. Jigging. Deep jigging, suspended jerk baits. This year, I'm going to be throwing mirror lures at them, twitch baits.
Mirror lures are incredible.
Yep, and I'm going to try to catch striped bass on them this year. We can catch them on the troll. You know, you can catch them on
the fly. Spearfish for them.
You can spearfish for them. You can catch them on the fly.
Flutter spoons.
Flutter spoons. If you get bored, you could throw frogs for them. Whopper ploppers. Yeah, whopper ploppers. You know what I mean? There's so many ways to catch one. And that's the kind of the same thing as largemouth bass. You know, you can top water, same thing. Top bar, live shiners, wacky rigs, finesse worms.
Yeah.
Literally any, there's multiple ways you can catch bass. And I'm assuming that's what intrigues bass fishermen because, and then with bass, every season they react differently, you know, pre-spawn, post-spawn. Warm weather temperature, cold front temperature, hot temperature. Same thing with striped bass. That's why I see it's kind of like the same layman's terms for us too, because striped bass kind of acts somewhat with largemouth. When the temperature drops, bass act differently. Tides drop, the bass act different. No, stripers act differently. Waters are too hot, where are they at? They're deep in the channels. No, if it's a nice, cool, overcast day, where they're at? They're up on the flats warming up, and you can throw top water at them. Do you know what I mean? So it's kind of like, yeah, we love striped bass, but we hate to target them because they're so finicky. There's certain days they want this, certain ways they want that. But I guess that's fishing, right? It challenges us to upgrade our style of fishing and always trying to learn new stuff. Like me, just like you guys would have said, I'll be sleeping. I'll literally wake up at 4 a.m. and like, oh shit, I'll jump on my phone app on Navionics. And I'm like, I remember just driving past this hole the other day. So I'll search for Navionics and I'll look at the line contours and I'll be like, that's it. This is the hole I saw last week on my fish finder. I just remember this clicked in my head. So I'll literally load it up on my Navionics chip for my fish finder. And then the next week I go out, I'll plug it into my fish finder and I'll literally drive to that hole and I'll drive around in circles on my boat, just literally side scanning, down imaging the whole hole just so I know what the layout is down there. So
listen, I get it, but it's still bass fishing.
That's still bass fishing.
I'm sorry. I don't get me wrong. I used to be like, for example, bluefish, used to hate them. I'm okay with bluefish now. I just don't want them crashing a party when I'm fishing for other stuff. If I can go out and target bluefish specifically, I'm okay with that. It's when I'm fluke fishing or flounder fishing and I lose $30 worth of gulp in about 10 minutes. That's when I hate bluefishing.
All right.
They're the uninvited guests to the party. Okay. That's when I hate blue fishing.
Blue fishing sucks when they're smaller than 2 pounds. Okay. When they get to about 5 to 10 to 15 to 20, that's a whole nother ball game. And if you've already experienced that like 2-3 weeks ago, we took you out and you got to see what these 15-pound bluefish do. Yeah. They wreck gear.
Yep.
I mean, I've been there. I've thrown over $350 worth of plugs away on bluefish on one day of fishing. I loved every minute of it. I loved every minute of it. You know why? It's just they destroy gear, and that's I like that. They put my gear to the test.
Anybody can lose 7 plugs.
Yeah, yeah. Literally, I lost $25 a pop on a plug. They don't care. They'll eat it all. You'll just sit there and just cry about it. But you know what? It's fishing.
I get it. But I'm a dad of 3 over here in this big house. I gotta be frugal and I don't want my gulp getting destroyed. That's all there is to it. I mean, why is that so hard to understand?
I always come to
crash my party. No,
well, they don't.
I had a lot of fun catching them that time a couple weeks ago. So it did change my mind a little bit. But so I'll put it this way. If I'm specifically targeting bluefish, I'm in. If it's something else and they come in and destroy my stuff, then I get annoyed. But it's all good.
Warren, have you guys got any big runs of choppers this year or no? I know Virginia Beach used to get them really good in the back.
Yeah, as in Rudy, I'll even tell on them. I don't care. Mm-hmm. Go fish for them. last year, we didn't really see it. Year before that, it was nuts. Last year it wasn't real big. They're starting to flow in, you know, what we call Taylor blues.
Yeah. Taylor's right. 5-10 pounds, somewhere around there, 7-10 pounds. Something like
see,
that.
our Taylors are like two to four.
Yeah. We call those cocktails up here. So, and our Taylors are like, our Taylor's like 5 to 7, Gators are like 10 to 15 and anything over 15 is a freaking gorilla.
See, the colloquial terms are so nuts because I mean, I'm sure there are people that would follow that you know, that those names here. But really, me and the people I'm around, it's a Taylor, then it's a Gator, then it's a Chopper.
Right. And then it's the same thing with Reds too, right? Because you guys got puppies. Yeah. And then you know, some guys call them Red Drum, some people call Redfish, and then you know, some call Bull Reds. Like, what do you classify as a Bull Red?
That is a heated debate that we have quite often.
It always is.
If I had to say, like, what is a Bull Red, they're not going to start filling out for their length really until they're about 34, 35 inches. That's where I'm going to start calling them a bull. Under that, I'm just going to call it a waste of 4 minutes. but then once you get back into the slot, they're all pups or slots.
Okay. So slot size fish or pups, and then bigger than that, waste of 4 minutes. Anything after five is a bull. See in Florida, because I was born and raised up in Fishing, Florida. So bull reds were just for us every day. For down Florida, we call anything over 40 a bull, and anything below that is a not worth the keep throwback.
Because that's really kind of how it is here. I mean, it's really 40 is where people really start calling them bulls. I'm going to call it a bull at 35 because I want everyone to win.
Yeah.
See, I'm on the opposite end of that spectrum. I don't like watered down accomplishments. I like the bull red to be 40, a cow striper to be 40, a tide runner weak fish to be 10 plus, a doormat flounder to be 10 plus.
10 plus, yeah.
You know, snakeheads, they've gotten this distinction of a dragon. A lot of people are calling 10-pound fish dragons, but they're so easy to catch. I don't think it's special at that point. I think the dragon has got to be 15 pounds and up. That's a heated debate I have with some of my friends, and I got a couple of them convinced that it makes sense. Like, when you can go out and catch, like, I know a guy that's caught probably 200-300 snakeheads over 10 pounds. Is that a special fish at that point? I don't think so.
No, but, I mean, how often do you think we can go out tomorrow and pick up a 10-pound snake?
I guarantee you, if I tried the next 2 weeks, I could probably get three of them.
I'm about to raise you on this bet. I'd like to see it.
I'm about to take a vacation.
All right. I bet you. I could get three. I bet I could get three 10-pounders if I really went after it. If I took my kayak out, which I never do, I bet you I could.
All right. You heard it first here on the podcast, guys. I'm betting with Dan. How are we betting this? Because we're releasing this in a few weeks.
So here's the thing. What's going to have to happen is we got to have a starting point of when the bet starts in two weeks. So
are we talking about 2 weeks from today or 2 weeks from?
No, I mean, it's got to make sense, right? So I got to be able to get my kayak out. It's got to work where I can actually get some fishing time in. So maybe my next 4 days, off, I'll really pound it hard.
All right. Well,
it'll be 2 weeks from now.
We'll make this announcement on our Instagram. If Dan can catch three doubles in the next whatever 2 weeks he calls a date, I'll take him to Texas Roadhouse. You can get a steak dinner on me.
Oh, snap. I'm in. I just want the accomplishment of catching three double-digit snakeheads in 2 weeks. I don't need a steak, but if you're going to offer up steak, I'm in.
Yeah, I'm
steak for snake game challenge. Over.
Steak for snake challenge. That's what it is, man.
Game over, buddy. Now, getting back to what we're chatting about, I've seen that you guys often travel south to fish. How often do you come up north, and do you have any other trips planned where you're going to be targeting other species that you don't typically target in your area? Like, for example, you talked about your Cape Cod fishing experience. Do you have any other trips like that planned? Do you have any further south trips planned? Anything like that? Any freshwater trips inland, things like that?
So I really haven't been planning a whole lot of trips with the guys. I know they've possibly put together a couple things. I'm always interested in going up north, especially up north in the salt. I just think it's a neat, I just remember, you know, a few years ago watching Elias V videos thinking like, man, I'm trying to go up north for a little bit. So, haven't planned anything. I definitely want to go back to Mass. That was awesome. We're constantly in North Carolina. We like to go to we're constantly in North Carolina. We like to go out to Neuse River area out there, Trent River. We've got a good buddy of ours, Dana Tabarini, Captain Dana Tabarini. He's an amazing captain, and he takes care of us. So trips planned. I think the next things we're really looking at is Florida. I think we're going to try to do the bullseye trip, do some peacock fishing, knife clownfish, stuff like that.
Those are a couple on my list. And the clown knife fish, the bullseye snakeheads, the tarpon, obviously, peacock. I got to get down there after those. Those are on my list for sure. But
don't forget the ghost. Don't forget the ghost of the flats. Bonefish.
Bonefish.
That's right. Bonefish. You can't forget the ghost of the flats, man.
Man, Glenn is wired up on bonefish. Glenn wants to go chase some bonefish. I want to go chase some food. I want to take some home and eat it at the end. I mean, I love fish, and I'm into that. Those bonefish videos are insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to kind of put it together when you're watching someone do it on the fly.
Yeah.
You don't really have much of a concept of what's going on. When you see one of those 8-pound bonefish take someone on spinning gear, it is like a whole nother world of fish run.
Yeah, they take you left to right. It's like lightning. It's like lightning speed. They're one of the fastest fish I've ever seen take off. So it's insane. But the invite's there. If you ever come up to our way, Jersey, just know you always have a flats boat to hop on. My boat's always open. You know what I mean? I don't know if you fly fish, but I'll take you out fly fishing. If not, we can stock the marshes, topwater bass in the morning, stripers in the morning, and then we can go try to hunt down that double-digit sheep any day you want. You know what I mean? It's there.
Oh, and absolutely.
And then we'll hit bridges and stuff and see if we can pull out a couple tog and stuff. You know, whatever you want to do, man. I don't do much. I just love to put people on fish. I'm over the stage of actually catching fish myself nowadays because I fish so much that I've caught what I wanted. Nowadays, it brings me joy to put people on fish. So especially if it's like something like a double digit sheep, like I'm literally trying to put the whole damn state on a double digit sheep. But you know what I mean? It's they're unicorns up here. You know, unless you have them dialed in, you're not going to find them. So people get lucky if they pick one or two off a year. You know, I've been studying them and trying to do my best and just researching and a lot of homework, a really good mentor. And I've learned in the past 5-6 years. So I'm pretty much I got them dialed in to that perfect window where I can pretty much almost guaranteed you'll pick up at least a couple fish. So.
Well, I hope you know that invite goes both ways. And both of you are more than welcome to come down south anytime you want and hop on the Sea Arc. I just, kind of got the reins on one of the boats I grew up on, and it's been awesome. A brand new 2020 Yamaha 115 on the back, and man, it's been awesome. And that's kind of the phase I'm starting to get into. I put people on the boat and I'm like, man, y'all fish. I'm gonna putz us around. I'm gonna make sure everything's perfect. I'm gonna tie 6 anchors onto the boat so we don't move an inch, and just put y'all on them.
Save that Christmas money, man. Get one of those Minn Kota spot locks. Don't need more anchors. No anchors no more, man.
That's the next investment.
Yeah, I got one, and it's a game changer for me. It's literally, I don't even know what an anchor even looks like anymore. Like I'll anchor offshore in like 50, 60 feet of water and just hit lock, and I'll just sit there and wreck fish.
Oh, they're awesome. I fished on boats with them. And yeah, it man. Is. I mean,
they're
it
insane.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah. But now that you got that little future fisherman, hopefully we get another stimulus check, right? There's your spot lock right there.
That's what I'm saying. One more. I'm so sick.
Stimulus was good to us fishermen last year.
That's right.
So now let's say you have a two hour window to fish, and you're going to go out, you're going to catch some fish. You want to bring a couple things home to eat. What is your confidence fish? Like I'm assuming it's probably speckled trout, but what is the fish where you, if you got 2 hour window that you want to bring a couple home for dinner, what are you doing? Where are you, what are you targeting?
I'm taking a pack of red curly tail gulp, with a white quarter ounce jig head. I'm going to tie it on, and I'm going to go catch a couple puppy drum.
Very nice.
I'm going to go catch a couple puppy drum because I can hit them. I've got it dialed up to where any time of the year, not any day because it's still fishing, but I can just about count on being able to go out just multiple spots all over the area, pretty much count on being able to go out and catch at least one slot size puppy drum. So if I have to eat, it's puppy drum.
Okay. Very nice. So that is a perfect example of these slot regulations working, because all around that area, it's pretty, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's a pretty sure bet. If you put your time in, you're going to get a couple of those slot fish, the redfish. And that's just a good endorsement of those regulations working, because it didn't used to be that way. Even probably 5-6 years ago, it wasn't that way.
Oh, it's been tight here. It's been tight on the puppy drum for a long time.
Yeah.
For at least the last, well, since I can really remember. But I'm a big fan of slots. I'm a big fan of slots. I think they work as long as they're wide enough. As long as there's been enough, you know, research put into it. I am a huge fan of slots.
I honestly feel like we need it on a couple of our fish up here, like flounder, for example. I mean, the way those fish grow, we have three fish at 18 inches in Jersey. Well, I think I read some scientific studies that said 93% plus minus is 18 inch flounder is going to be female.
Yeah.
So whereas you have the four fish at 16 and a half inches, at 16 and a half inches, what I read is that's, I think, 62% chance of that being a female fish. So just with those different regulations, if you're keeping the lower end of the regulations, there's a 31% difference in what you're keeping as far as a breeding female fish and a male fish. Now, there's no guarantee that you'll get one or the other, but at least you're giving it a better shot down there, which is why me personally, I get flack for it, but I'll go to Delaware, I'll go to Maryland, I'll go to Virginia and flounder fish. Why? Because I don't need an 18 or 19 inch fish. One 16 and a half fish feeds my whole family. If I quarter it, I don't eat fish, believe it or not. I've tried. I just don't do it. So one quartered 16 and a half inch flounder, everybody in my family gets a fillet. Now my son's getting a little bit bigger. So he usually gets the little one on the belly side. So I'm going to have to step that up a little bit, but even so, like I used to be all gung ho about limiting out, and it's nice every once in a while, but now as I get older, I get more into the teaching aspect of fishing and more into the conservation part of fishing. I think that it's very important to be able to put fresh fish on the table, know where your fish comes from, you know, be able to, especially you with, you know, a kid, you got to be more, I would think you'd be more conscious of what you're putting in front of your family as opposed to where you used to be in the past, where it's just yourself or whatever. You know, we could be slobs sometimes, right? As men, you know, we don't care about all that stuff, but when you're feeding other people, it's a little bit of a different scenario. So I'm more careful about where I'm getting my fish from and what I'm putting in front of my family now than I ever was.
I mean, I think slots do work. Sometimes they work too much. If you've ever been in Florida, you know, the slot, they do a really tight snook slot there. They do a really tight redfish slot there. I think they're almost the same size with you guys in Virginia. The odds of catching a slot fish down in Florida off like Sebastian, and I've fished there almost 15 years of my life, it's rare. Like that's like a slot red. You're not going to fight one, catch one off the pier. It's impossible. You maybe if you go back deep into the lagoon and stuff, you'll pick off a slot back there. But like literally there's thousands of reds below, right below the pier, but they're all like 35, 40 inches, 45, 50, 55. You know, it gets to a point where fishermen, they'll catch a big red, like a 45, 50. They don't even want to bring it up on the thing. They literally just pop their lines because it's like,
what can you do with it? Kill
you
it?
You can't do anything, and you can't literally, you got to throw it back, you know? And I mean, the reds are pretty hardy, but like the drop, I see them sometimes. Some fishermen, like they know, like put them back into the bridge net and lower them and then revive them and let them swim out. Other guys literally just dump them off head first too. Sometimes like the impact. I mean, I guess it would be great. It's healthy because they get that big jolt of oxygen through their gills as they're being dropped in. But at the same time, sometimes I feel bad them dropping them that high. So it's kind of like, so now here's my question to you, Warren. Do you think if they impeded a slot regulation on the striped bass that it would help? Because we have, I mean, we have that. What are you guys at? Are you the same as us? One fish over 35 or 38? Or the one fish below 35?
So we are 18 to 34, I think. We do have a slot for a
striped. Oh, okay. So you guys have one for 18 to 34. Ours is one
and
fish.
Then we have a trophy season where it's like one fish over 34 or 36. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Their regulation is a lot different than ours.
It's
Dan.
So okay. I've asked game wardens. Mm-hmm. I've asked Marine Police. I have even called the Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries. Nobody can give me a clear representation and a clear breakdown of our striper laws. Striper get played with so much. It is so gray area ambiguous what laws they really want to make with striper in Virginia that it's ridiculous. It's frustrating. Sometimes I don't even like catching striper or keeping striper during the season because the laws are so ambiguous. You really have no clue whether you're a poacher or not. It's a little frustrating. What they need to do is clear it up. I think the slot's a great idea. They just implemented the slot recently. I like it. They need to really start clearing up on how we can fish for striper in the bay.
It's nuts because you have your regulations and Maryland is 10 times worse. And it's their game fish. Like, you know, you got these fish that are highly touted down there, and then they have this trophy season where they just completely blow it up. Like the trophy season needs to go away, number one, in my opinion. It's fine to catch and release, but why keep breeders? I don't get the science behind it. I don't understand. And then in Maryland, if you're on a boat for hire, you can keep two fish. Whereas if you're a wreck guy on land, you can only keep one fish. Like, why is there a difference? Like you talk about ambiguous. That it just drives me nuts trying to figure out Maryland's regulations. It's absurd.
It seems like any state below Delaware, like their regulations are so out of whack that no one really, like, even for someone that lives in Virginia, he called this many departments and no one gives him a straight answer of like, hey, these are the regulations, these are the sizes. He called different offices and they couldn't even figure out what the real regulations were.
Now you can read it, but it's like, you know, if on the fourth Tuesday, if you put on your left sock first in the morning after you get out of the shower, you have to get two fish over 28 and release them backwards before you can keep one.
And then if you didn't rub your ear sideways three times, you can't keep any fish that day.
And you're going to jail.
Exactly.
Absurd. All right. So to rein this back in, I see you promote a line of sauces that you use. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So that is a company called Ashman Co. It is. So Glenn was actually a coach for the owner's son, baseball coach. And it's a local company. They make seafood specific sauces and rubs. They have some other stuff as well, but we just thought it was super cool. I mean, they have, probably 16 different just fish sauces. I mean, all for marinating, cooking, and dipping fish. And we just brought them the Run the Marsh idea and kind of our framework and said, hey, would this be something that, you know, we could maybe team up on? And they said, yeah, let's do it. And we started kind of repping Ashman Co. and using their sauces. And we have a lot of film that we've taken and just kind of held on to. Catch and Cooks, things like that. But they've got good sauce. They've got good sauce. They've got one rub called the Scandinavian Salmon Rub that I use for everything. I use it for my chicken. I use it for burgers. I use it for it's awesome. And if anything, it's a cool idea. I mean, it's sauce made just for seafood. So I like that idea.
I do like that idea. I eat a lot of seafood and I'm always trying to find newer ways just to kind of kick things up and spice them. You know what I mean?
Now, in that line of thinking, now, as you said, redfish is probably your favorite fish to eat. How would you say, you know, a couple different ways you prepare redfish and speckled trout that is a no-brainer that nobody can mess up?
Okay, so for speckled trout, if you are not a huge seafood fan, you may not be a huge fan of speckled trout. Speckled trout is a lot more oily than, say, you know, a bluegill or something like that. It's not a super mild white fish. It's still a mild fish, but it's almost got some salmon qualities to it. Fry it. And if you don't want to fry it, pretend it's a piece of salmon. Throw some honey and hot sauce on it and put it in the oven. So good that way. Redfish. Take some Cajun blackening seasoning. I don't like to do it. I like to make my own because there's too much salt. But you just take all the spices that are red and then some pepper, and you just chop the side of the redfish off. Just pull the fillet right off. Keep the scales on. Keep the skin on. Season the meat side, drop the meat side down on your grill, flip it after 2 minutes, close the cover, let it cook for another 6 minutes, pull it off, and you will have the best meal. I promise you, blackened redfish on the half shell is the best way, the easiest way to prepare a fish.
Yeah, that's I would say that is probably the one preparation that I hear from pretty much everyone. Our buddy Kyle goes down to Louisiana every year. And they bring back a bunch of redfish, and that's his go-to too. So I've never heard anybody say anything bad about that preparation. As far as speckled trout go, my kids like milder fish. So when I bring some of those home, I got to do a little bit of more work to kind of prepare those fish. So one thing I've done to kind of firm them up, because they're a little bit more of a fragile flesh, not quite as bad as weakfish. I've only ever kept one weakfish, and I had to because I gut hooked it, but. You talk that's a whole different story. Weak fish compared to speckled trout, you'd think they'd be pretty similar. Not at all. Not at all.
Now weak fish are like cotton balls.
Yeah. You take a spoon and roll all the meat off of there so easily. It's just the flesh is so fragile. But speckled trout, what I've done with it is I'll flay it completely clean. Obviously bleed all the fish at no matter what. Anything you're harvesting, you should always bleed, personally, in my opinion. But I will soak them in a saltwater brine for about an hour to 2 hours. And then I'll wrap them in towels and let them firm up overnight. The saltwater brine seems to make them a little bit firmer and it's a little bit easier to cook them. And it takes some of the gaminess away from what I found. But my kids like fried fish. If it's brown, my kids are in. So.
Yeah.
Now we'll try and grill a couple different things here and there. I'll make like fish cakes. I made some really good fish cakes out of speckled trout that everybody loved. We did that for like a 7-fish dinner around the holidays one time, and it was a hit. Did the fish cakes with a jalapeno jam, tartar sauce is incredible.
Oh, that sounds good. I love fish cakes. We do a lot of fish cakes.
Yeah. The secret ingredient is the Zatarain's crab and shrimp boil. It's in a little vial about 3 inches tall. Just a couple little drops of that in there. Money. Absolute money. I just gave away one of my secrets for my fish cakes. Everybody knows now, but yeah, you boil the fish, get it like to a crab consistency, drop 3 drops of that Zatarain's crab and shrimp boil, and it's money. And then if you got to have some kind of sauce, get a sweetened jalapeno jam and replace the regular sweet relish with that. Mix it with the mayonnaise. Off the charts.
And guys, don't go listening to that recipe and think that you're a spice demon and you're going to put about 8 or 10 drops of that Zatarain's in there.
No.
Because it will blow your back end off. I'm telling you.
And not only that, your house will stink for days if you have too much of that in there. No more than 3 drops. I promise you, it's super concentrated. But you can find it at most grocery stores. Zatarain's crab and shrimp boil is the secret ingredient for any fish cake you make. Period, period, period.
Agreed.
Well, Warren, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, brother. We've had a great, we could go on forever. I mean, I think we've just talked for about an hour and 20 minutes. It felt like we just hopped on. So any other social media plugs? I know you're pro staff with Ashman and then maybe another company. You want to talk about that before we hop off?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we also work really closely with a clothing company called Attaboy Southern Apparel Co. The owner, Todd, he's a great guy. We just really get along well. We mesh well. And we're part of a, we're their inshore pro team. They also have an offshore pro team, just killer guys all around. We definitely like to thank everybody that supported us so far. You know, we sell our own clothes as well. So the people who have purchased that's awesome. If you'd like to be added to our order list, feel free to DM us on Instagram or our email at runthemarshva@gmail.com. That's pretty much it. Thanks, guys. Thank you so much. This has been a blast. And you're right, we could definitely go on forever. So I almost feel bad not having the other guys with me, but they said, go ahead, charge it. You're the spokesperson. So,
hey, we'd be happy to have those guys on at some point too. So we will be circling back with some of our guests, cause we have some unfinished business with some folks. So,
our next podcast with you guys, if we can get you all, maybe two of you guys, even all three of you guys on, you know, like we'll dig deeper into like the fishing aspect, like a day in the life of a fisherman in Virginia Beach. You know what I mean? Like literally tactics, techniques, stuff like that. You know, no spot burning, but you know, just if, like an everyday Joe Schmo like me that never fished Virginia Beach a day in his life. If I was to drop in, you know, I plan a trip in 2 weeks, you know, like I would listen to this podcast and kind of get a hang of what to bring to at least be able to pick up a fish or two just for like, you know, just because it's the very first time there. And we would love to literally sit down with you guys at a full round table and literally just have a guy talk day just about tactics.
We would love that too. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we do. The only secret, you know, the only secret we have is the dance we do after we catch the fish. I mean, a couple spots and stuff like that. But honestly, we want people to be able to go out and enjoy it. And we definitely don't want people running their props through our lines looking like dummies trying to figure out how to fish. We'd rather just tell them. So,
yeah.
Yeah, man. Like we're at the mercy of the pandemic, right? So this is how we're recording now, but we're going to be doing some remote recording up front soon with video and stuff like that. So I'll come to you guys at some point and we'll put something together, and Qua, I'll come to you. We'll come down there and live it up. And then we'll tear Virginia Beach up. Tide Chasers, mash up with Run the Marsh.
I would love it.
I mean, it's a 5-hour tow for me, but I'll tow the skiff all the way down there. I don't care.
That's right. We'll run it. We ought to have a whole fleet by then.
A couple of kayaks. We'll tow the kayaks in the back of the boats.
Yeah, man.
To drag you guys around with us.
Look like a yard train.
There you go.
But Warren, it's been an absolute pleasure, brother. Thank you for hopping on with us. You gave us some amazing content. It's only going to get better from here. We're excited to see what you guys do with the page and where you guys grow your audience. And we are definitely happy to be a part of that with you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dan. Thank you, Qua. Really enjoyed the time. And look forward to keeping in touch.
Yeah, most definitely, man. Just reach out to us whenever you ever come up, or if we go down, we'll definitely reach out to you.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, buddy. We're going to stay on if you want to hop off, but thanks again, and I'll be talking to you soon, okay?
Yeah. All right. I'll be talking to you.
Have a good night, man.
Get some sleep, brother.
Oh, I'm going to try.
See you, my man.
See you later, dude.
Awesome.
Whew. That was a good long one, man.
Yeah, it was good stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of different stuff. I was looking at my bullet points here, and I thought we get like this. Like we go off on our tangents. It's like, man, do I have enough here to fill the time? And that was awesome. He was great.
Yeah. I mean, most of our podcasts is we do have our little bullet points and like stuff we want to hit, but like in reality, we just want to sit down and just talk fish with a bunch of guys. Yeah. That's literally like, yeah, sometimes we'll jump off target, but you know what? That's kind of what we want to do. We want to, if a subject clicks with us, you know, we run with it, you know what I mean? And it may not have had nothing to do with fishing, but you know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But like I said, we don't want this to be like one of those kind of like, oh, it's just about fishing and all that. No, this is that our podcast is always about a fisherman and how he enjoys his life, whatever it may be. You know what I mean? And that's what we want to bring to our guests. Yeah, maybe it's not for every guest, but you know what? It's something fun. It's something different. But like, you know, in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, if you guys think you know someone that would make a perfect guest for us, feel free to hit us up. No, we don't bite. Just reach out to me, reach out to Dan, reach out to the Tide Chasers podcast forums, and, you know, shoot us a message. You know, I mean, tell us your story, and, you know, we'll be able to put you on. You know, like, it's all about just having fun, man.
And as we've said in the past, we have some exciting things coming up that we're not ready to talk about yet. And, you know, we're going to be bringing the video aspect and the YouTube and everything. Obviously, we just wanted to make sure we had this down. And I think we got a nice audience going. We got some amazing guests. We have amazing guests lined up, and we got some exciting things coming up in the future. We're really looking forward to bringing some exciting and different content. Obviously, you know, we're bringing on guests where we want to introduce them to our following at this point, so they can kind of get to know who these people are. But there's more to it. I mean, you know, people have families, people have kids, people have all this other stuff that makes them who they are. So we're going to talk about that. And obviously we'll get into different aspects of a day in the life of the fisherman, as you said, Kwa. So it's all about, you know, building a community, really. It's, you know, there's a lot of us that we can stretch our following and kind of really make a difference by having a singular message of, hey, we love to fish, but we also care about these fisheries. We also care about conservation, responsible harvesting, responsible handling of the fish. You know, that like we will never voice an opinion that's going to have someone target a muskie when it's not the right time to do it. You know, we're going to follow the right thing to do. That's just who we are. So we appreciate everybody tuning in as always, and all the amazing feedback we've gotten so far. And as always, thank you. Thank you for listening in. Thank you for tuning in. As usual, you can find us at Tide Chasers Podcast on Facebook, at Tide_Chasers on Instagram. You can find all of our podcast links in the bio of our Instagram page, as well as on our Facebook page. And really just kind of give us an idea of future content that you want to hear. If there's a specific direction you want us to take an episode, reach out. We've had people make suggestions and we've ran with it. So it's just a matter of, you know, we're just two people. There's a lot more content possibility out there that our guests and our followers will be able to kind of highlight for us. So, but as always, we really appreciate you tuning in.
Yep, sounds good. May, once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in with us. Check us out on the platform that Dan just mentioned a few minutes earlier. Besides that, stay tuned for our next podcast.
Tight lines, everybody.
Yep. Good night. Tight lines, everyone.
On Mondays, head offshore with Captain Scott Walker and Steve Roger for breathtaking deep sea adventures.
Coming to me.
Double. He's jumping.
Oh!
Look at that belly.
Don't miss Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern.
Tell a few fish stories along the way.
On Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.